It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. After years of back and forth in the state legislature over how to spend funding to address PFAS contamination, in April, Governor Evers signed two bills into law that release $133 million to help communities deal with this widespread pollutant.
A growing body of research has linked PFAS exposure to serious health risks, including certain types of cancer and child developmental and fertility issues.
This influx of funding will help with PFAS testing and remediation efforts around the state, including money for new wells and a provision to protect, quote, innocent landowners who have pollution on their property through no fault of their own.
The state of Maine has been down this path. In 2021, its lawmakers passed major legislation aimed at fixing the state's own PFAS crisis and invested more than $200 million in the effort.
Where does Maine stand now, 5 years later? That's the topic of a new book that looks at the state's PFAS story with lessons for other states that are enacting policies and allocating funds.
Marina Schaffler is an environmental writer. Her new book is called Inescapable: Facing Up to Forever Chemicals. Marina, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Your book starts with the story of Fred Stone, a dairy farmer who discovered high PFAS levels in his milk. And he didn't stay quiet about this. He didn't go about his business as usual with his herd of 150 cows. Can you talk about the chain of events that happened and what set it off?
Certainly. He had been on that land for three generations. And when he heard that there were these chemicals in his well water and then his milk tested for them as well, he was blindsided initially, really not understanding the source. And the state did a lot of testing on the site, and it gradually became clear that he had, with complete state sanction, the state had encouraged farmers in previous decades to spread sludge, both municipal and industrial sludge, on their land. And the high PFAS levels he found tied directly back to the sludge applications. And at first, the state wasn't eager to acknowledge that this might be a more widespread problem. And so he had to really speak repeatedly and push for the legislature to do further testing. And when the state did further testing of both dairy farms and other farms where sludge had been permitted in the past, they found recurrent problems.
Mm. So he was licensed to spread this wastewater sludge on his fields, not knowing he was also spreading PFAS. And then he has to kill off most of his cows to contain the spread. Their business is ruined. Did Maine public agencies help or get the picture of what was going on?
Initially, in the first few years, there wasn't much support for Fred and Laura Stone. And it was devastating, as you say, for them. They were already starting to struggle with health problems. Their business was decimated. The value of the farm that was their primary asset was diminished. It was very challenging. And he finally came forward publicly to put more pressure on the state and get some more support for the farming community. And as other farmers discovered the problem, farmers testified before the legislature. Having farmers advocate before the legislature was pivotal in getting policy change and much more state support for the farming community and others affected by past sludge spreading.
And Maine was an early leader among states to start to address PFAS contamination, to start to put money toward it and figure out policies. How did Maine get people to care about invisible forever chemicals that are persistently lurking in the waters and in soil and elsewhere?
I think a lot of people in Maine are deeply attach to the place and value the health and well-being of our natural environment. So it was really the way that PFAS had undermined that was crushing for a lot of people. And the way it was affecting rural communities made it a unifying issue in the legislature. The initial support was very bipartisan, and it felt like an affront to the people of the state to have this kind of ubiquitous and persistent contamination in a place that we want to be healthy.
One physician you interview called PFAS contamination a slow-moving environmental disaster that's uprooting people's lives, and that there's this psychological toll alongside, of course, the health risks and PFAS exposure. What did you hear from people dealing with PFAS contamination on their property?
That is a good description, because it just festers for people. They have this uncertainty around future health concerns, and there are a wide array of potential health impacts. And so one farmer described it as sort of like a ticking time bomb with a faulty wiring, you know, just knowing that there would likely be impacts and kind of having to wait and watch because there's not too much that can be done. There's work underway, research underway here on some promising leads that might help lower PFAS blood levels. But in the early years, that wasn't even known. So it has been, and then there's the diminishment of their property values and not being able to pursue a lot of passions. You know, people couldn't hunt or fish where they had traditionally done that. People who had gardens, you know, couldn't eat their own produce anymore. They weren't sure about, you know, locally what was safe to buy. They weren't sure about what in the supermarkets because there's so little testing on PFAS. So it introduced a huge amount of uncertainty and stress in people's lives.
I want to zoom in on paper mills because you mentioned sludge, and Maine has more than a dozen paper mills still functioning. Wisconsin, we here have upwards of 30. What is the role of paper mills in PFAS pollution?
The paper mills that produce coated papers, so water-resistant, stain-resistant, like foodware that is coated or other coated papers, use PFAS in that process. And when the paper mill discharges that, the ones here had no treatment prior to going to the municipal treatment plant. And those, of course, are designed for biological treatment, but not for removing persistent chemicals like PFAS. So that was just going right through the system into the sludge and into the waste discharge as well in wastewater. But the sludge would concentrate the chemicals to some degree. And then for decades, that had been land applied both in farm settings and actually in some forest ones here as well.
And I should note that has happened here in Wisconsin, too. And our DNR confirmed last year that paper companies were primarily responsible for PFAS contaminated sludge that was getting spread on farm fields. What steps has Maine taken to address this issue of the sludge on farm fields?
Maine was the first state to ban the application of sludge to farm fields and the use of compost containing sludge, because some sludge was also going into composting facilities and then getting redistributed out to gardens and athletic playing fields and a whole range of settings as well. So that was instrumental in stopping the distribution of PFAS into food growing settings, mm-hmm. But we pretty quickly, the legislature realized it needed to move upstream and turn off the tap. So Maine was among the first states to start putting bans on various categories of consumer products. And it went very ambitious initially with that product ban and discovered pretty quickly that it was really difficult for people to trace the supply chain back and figure out where PFAS was, you know, in their products. And Maine is a small state. It's 1.3 million people. So it made it challenging in terms of having enough influence on changes in industry practice. But as other states have come along with more consumer bans, and Maine revised its product bans to align more with Minnesota. So as more and more states adopt product bans and align them, it is going to stop the flow into the waste stream. And it makes it really easier for industry to modify their practices because the states are on a similar time frame.
We're talking about how Maine has been addressing PFAS pollution in their state and what Wisconsin can learn. Marina Schaffler has a new book. It's called Inescapable, Facing Up to Forever Chemicals. Marina, out of that 2021 legislative session in Maine came a rapid policy response addressing PFAS from a variety of angles. You've named some, putting in $200 million around that number in the first 2 years. What results did the state see?
One place that the state has put a lot of money, 60 or 70 million of that has gone towards a fund, and it sounds like Wisconsin may be following a similar track in supporting those affected. So that has enabled farmers to pivot their businesses to, in most cases, they've been able to sustain their operations, but potentially grow different crops or different approaches. In a few cases where that's not been feasible, it allows for buyouts of the farms. It has supported farmers financially in the process of working through the testing, in supporting their own health testing, and even mental wellness support, because this is a pretty traumatic experience for people who encounter high contamination. The process of setting up that fund involved a lot of farmers, so it really reflected their needs quite well, I think.
How are those farmers doing today? Do you have any insights?
I think it's a long, one of the challenges of PFAS is it is so persistent, and it's a long recovery. You know, and it's not a full recovery because these chemicals so permeate our environment, and the health threat is going to linger through generations. So I think some of the most affected individuals, I think, are still struggling a lot, even though the support system has grown stronger for them.
PFAS was once this bridge-building topic for lawmakers in Maine, for communities in Maine, something, you know, you show how people could agree on and work together across political divides. And you think that that's not so much the case anymore. What has changed?
It has. There are still some areas and some important PFAS legislation went through in this last legislative session here with bipartisan support. But I think where the tensions became evident was when the PFAS regulations and laws bumped up against industry practice and it was very challenging for a lot of the industries here to, they can't necessarily adapt quickly to remove PFAS from the production of products, particularly those that aren't manufactured here. You know, they're using parts and components that are coming from elsewhere. So that was a source of tension. And of course, the waste industry valued having a low-cost means of sludge disposal.
Yeah. Because where do they take the sludge now? I mean, that must have been a big issue. If we can't spread it easily in our farm fields, it has to go somewhere.
And that this is a problem going back really to the Clean Water Act, where they tried ocean dumping initially, realized that wasn't a good idea. Then they went to land spreading. And now that the toxic effects of that are evident, and now there's an effort to look into drying sludge more. Currently, it's going to landfills here, which is not an optimal solution. And because the PFAS persists, it's leaching out from the landfills, and then that water, landfill leachate, has to be treated as well. So the really insidious thing about PFAS is it's just so prone to keep cycling through the system, and it underscores the importance of getting it out at the front end.
Marina, there is this theme that runs through your book about the regulatory void at the federal level and resulting in states creating this patchwork of their own policies and regulations on PFAS. We see it in Maine. We see it in Wisconsin, elsewhere. Based on Maine's experience, do you think PFAS is something that can be resolved at the state level?
Absolutely not. It is. We need federal leadership. We really need international leadership, because this is a global problem now, and it is so ubiquitous. It's cycling through the atmosphere. It's coming down in the rain. So it really needs leadership at a much larger scale. The states have worked, I think, well collaboratively in trying to align, you know, some of their legislative efforts, like Maine and Minnesota did, but it's not adequate.
Marina, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Marina Schaffler is an environmental writer based in Maine. We've been talking about her new book. It's called Inescapable: Facing Up to Forever Chemicals. It looks at Maine's efforts to address PFAS contamination at the state level. Is your community working to reduce PFAS in the environment or replacing a well? How is that process going? Will the funding be able to fully cover the project? Share your perspective and where your community is at or your local utility is at with working on the PFAS crisis. Email wisconsintoday@wpr.org. That's wisconsintoday@wpr.org.